The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Welcome along to the GAR. This is the Hurling Show on a Thursday with Cheddar and Michael are here in studio with me. I'm going to start off giving Clare supporters and Galway supporters a shout out, because they've been doing a lot of giving out, lads. And I can see where they're coming from. And the Clare County Board Chairman, Joe Cooney, was given out as well. He says it's a joke, and that is that there was no tickets released to clubs, lads, for the replay. So there's a lot of things they're complaining about, right? So number one, they're complaining that the game is in Thurles to begin with, when it's only 48,000 capacity. 54,000 were in Croke Park. So 6,000 less people are going to get to watch an All-Ireland semi-final. Think how big that game is. And this is all because Dublin play Roscommon in Croke Park in a dead rubber that nobody cares about. Dublin will play their second team and Roscommon are going up as lambs to the slaughter. So that makes no sense straight away. So then they have to put up with Thurles. Then when you get to Thurles, you get to the fact that no tickets went to clubs. They're being put on sale on a Monday through Centra and Super Value. So there's no kind of club members guaranteed tickets. You have to leave work or you have to go online, and the queues online apparently were 2 hours on Ticketmaster. So you either have to queue at a Super Value or Central Shop, or you have to queue online while you're in work. There has to be a better way of doing this. In the GAA's defence, they said because Galway clubs were already distributing tickets for the Salt Hill game, the Super 8 game, they didn't want to overload them by putting them through clubs as well on that side. Is that an excuse enough, lads? I'm just trying to think of somebody from an older generation that is a long-standing club member and was at the game in Croke Park and just doesn't really have the means to go and get one on the Monday, Cheddar.
I think there's a lot of red herrings being put up here. I think there's a real issue around the late notice and the seemingly lack of planning about the replay and that, and the notification to counties and the supporters that, look, if there's a replay, and we might have a discussion on that later on in terms of a need for a replay, but if there's a replay here, here's when it's on, here's where it's going to be, and here's the ticket arrangements. I think if that notice was there in advance, I don't think it would be as difficult.
Yeah.
But I just think, the method of ticket allocation and that, you know, I take the point about club membership, and maybe there's a dual access here that's needed in terms of sending some tickets to clubs and other tickets in being available to the public from the current outlets. But look, we're the GAA, we need to move with the times here, and why not have us being ahead of the times here, and let's look at the Ryanair model, where you can book online and print your own ticket and have a barcode on it and all of that. You know, why do we need to be always behind the curve here in terms of, you know, introducing new technologies and that? So I think there's a lot of just red herrings about this, really, to be honest with you. You know, I take the point about older people and that, but look, yeah, it's as difficult for an older person to go up to the club or to go into the county board offices to collect a ticket as it is to go down to the local Super Value to collected. So I just think there's just a little bit too much made of this. I think we should move with the times. I think we should actually move even ahead of the times here and look at, you know, real innovative models of ticketing where you might actually print it yourself.
On Ticketmaster you can print it yourself, Cheddar. Yeah. Like, I mean, online you just print off your ticket. It's not a match ticket. You're just doing that barcode kind of thing. I just think that how many touts can queue up at a Centra? At least going through the clubs, you're almost ruling that out. Whereas Centra and Super Value, how many of them are getting into the hands of touts, and how many are not getting into the hands of genuine? What's to stop 10 touts queuing up in that line in a row, and they're buying 3 or 4 tickets each? Like, I mean, you're a sitting duck for that kind of thing. Not only are you playing it in a smaller venue, like, I mean, I think an All-Ireland semi-final deserves better than that.
I know, they're leaving their legs open, Willie, with just... He can't stop the touts buying tickets. I know there's a limit of number of tickets you can buy in the shops when you go in, and it's understandable all the supporters are frustrated. Again, I think, like, there's no minor match before, so there might be a few thousand less at it than there were, because there was a minor match ahead of the match in Croker, you know, that might take a few thousand number away. But it is frustrating. It might, as Cheddar said, it's going to force Croke Park into more forward thinking. We've seen them getting caught out with these things in the past, and as Shutter said, if this game's a draw, it's going to Tourist the following week. No one complaining. You know what the story is. It's just a late notice.
Yeah, it's the late notice. By surprise, yeah. No kind of foresight on it. Just to finish up on it, they said that there wasn't Croke Park wasn't an option on Monday because it wasn't a bank holiday up the north. But like, I mean, Roscommon played Mayo last year on the bank holiday Monday, and there didn't seem to be a problem with that. I don't know. I just think if you've got huge demand for a match like that, I don't think Thurles is the answer. But speaking of Thurles, lads, Gerlach Nan has said, I was just reading this morning, and he's talking about the pitch in Thurles versus the pitch in Croke Park, right? And he says, if you watch the ball in Croke Park, you saw the difficulty players had rising the ball the last day. It's not bouncing as high. The field isn't as fast. The butt of the grass is thicker. It's as simple as that. Now, it's a great pitch. It's a brilliant pitch. But the ball doesn't move as fast as it does in Thurles. Like, is he reading too much into that, or do you think that's a...
Yeah, like, in fairness to Jay, the first times I played in Croke Park, I noticed when you're poking the ball before the match, if you're poking it along the ground, it does take a little swerve left and right, wherever way the grass is cut.
Right.
But when the game starts, it's just as fast as any other pitch. I think it's nonsense.
Right.
I've played in Thurles, I've played in Croke Park, and both pitches are lightning fast and good. It's good summer days, will you like? So,
yeah.
Again, you like winding people up the odd time about hurling snobbery. It's a bit of Munster snobbery.
That's
here.
What I was going
like,
to say.
It is. Like, Thurles is a fantastic pitch, but if you can't pick a ball up in Croker on the surface out there, it's not the pitch that's to blame. You know, there's a bit of nerves there in the first 20 minutes of that game. That comes down to, like, you know, because in the second half, lads are picking the ball up full tilt. So
yeah.
I don't think that's an excuse, to be honest.
You'll be in agreement with this, Cheddar. Munster hurling snobbery.
I know. I might even go a little bit further, Willie. First of all, I'd like to go back to another point. I'm surprised that Michael didn't suggest that the Dublin footballers would go off down to Roscommon and play that match and allow hurling take place there. Look, I think there's a lot of drivel written. I'm sort of surprised that Ger comes up with this drivel, to be honest with you. You cannot say on one hand that Croke Park pitch is a perfect pitch and then on the other hand say it's not. I take Michael's point, although I've rarely heard, there's been very, very few players have commented negatively on the Croke Park pitch. And I certainly take Michael's point about that, you know, there's a lot of other things going on at that level. It's an All-Ireland quarter final, there's pressure on, the level of marking may be tighter, although maybe last Sunday it wasn't. And, you know, there's a lot of other variables going on here which might explain this. Bear in mind also that I was at the match, was it the Munster final match, when the Thurles pitch was in desperate condition. I know it improved for the Kilkenny Galway match, but that has not always been the case. The Thurles has been great, although it has been noted for a good side. I will say this about Croke Park. I think, generally speaking, when you see football matches played in football pitches and hurling matches played in hurling pitches, and I'm sort of talking about, say, the Nolan Parks and this, where, you know, where it's, generally speaking, hurling is played, certainly the grass cut and the level of the grass and maybe the thickness of the grass at that particular time of the game is different. And I think Croke Park need to actually maybe look at that. GAA maybe just look at that and just say, look, here's the protocols for the grass cut for a football match and here's what they are for hurling, and just stick to them and talk to the hurling people and talk to players. You know, Michael has made the point here, you know, why not talk to the Patrick Horgans and all of these players and just say to them, look, here's what we're doing. We've got this fantastic stadium in Croke Park. We've got state-of-the-art cutting machinery. Here's how we're going to cut the grass. What's the best we can do here? And, you know, once you do that, then the discussion is over. But I'm going back to Jarrett's point, I just think it's silly talk, to be honest with you.
Right, okay, so you say the thickness of the grass, the length of the grass. So yeah. Like, I mean, hurlers want it that little bit shorter, or hurlers want a bit more in it to be able to scoop up under the ball?
No, you'd like a bit more in it to get under a ball. But, like, again, I think that's nonsense what Jarrett said. I've never got caught out picking up a ball in Croke Park and the surface is immaculate.
Right.
What you can get caught out on Mully is, and on a summer's day, they water the pitch an awful lot. So sometimes when you see lads skidding all over the place in Croke Park, it's just boots, you know. Sometimes you go to Moldy's, it's a hard surface, but it's watered down, so you skid off the ground a little bit. That was my only catch on the Croke Park surface the other time.
Right,
over the
okay.
Years.
Well, we move on from this one, lads, because this one is kind of boggling my mind, and that is the increase in scoring, the increase in shots on goal. In the last 3 or 4 years, there's been an upward trend, and this year has just gone, last weekend went to new levels, right? So we're looking at, like, I mean, the stats from last weekend are off the charts, right? They're off the charts. So it was 130 scores recorded over the 197 minutes. In total, there were 214 shots at the target, lads, in 197 minutes. Like, I mean, that is just, that's never been seen before. It's phenomenal. It's unbelievable. Now, there were 73 wides, right? So that's that's the difference between obviously the 130 pounds and the 214. That's 74 wides then. And well, obviously not wides, dropped into the goalie's hand, you know, not scores. So like, I mean, why is this, lads? Like, I mean, I was tweeting about this saying, surely the marking isn't tight enough now, or is it the puck out strategies, or is it, my theory is that it's the half back lines letting their men on out the field and not marking them, and then there's too many men not being picked up, and there's, it's outside of the full back lines and the full forward lines, it didn't look like anyone was necessarily marking anyone. Like, I mean, what do you put this down to? Is this going to be a trend that we're going to see into the future, Cheddar, that like these attempts on goals, number one, are do you think there's too many, and number two, what are the reasons for them?
I don't think there's too many, actually, Willie. Look, that's what spectators come to see. They come to see scores. I think anybody who was in the Aviva last night and that was an Arsenal supporter, it's hard to believe you'd wait 90 minutes to see one score. I think, first of all, I'm always a little bit wary about looking at facts and you know, pulling some trends out of that, because there's so many variables involved. First of all, we've had the best summer we've had in a long, long time, and it's a forwards game to an extent with that type of weather. There's very little wind, very little rain, and that, you know, throughout the last couple of weeks there. So it's probably a forwards game. But I would really put it down to probably two things, and there's other variables, but there's two critical things here. The level of coaching that goes on now right throughout a young player's career, right through his club, right through his schools, right through his third level, right into the development squads, right up to senior level, is way, way ahead of whatever it was, you know, in the 60s, 70s or 80s. And I think it's interesting to actually, you know, broaden that discussion and to look at Limerick and why Limerick have got to where they are with the quality of player that they have. And when you look at the strength of Limerick clubs in All-Ireland Club Championship, it's clear that they have a very, very high vision within their clubs to be All-Ireland Club Champions. And to be that, they must have fantastic development plans to bring their players to that level. So the level of coaching and the development of that player right from his six-year age right up to minor, right up to senior, has to be very, very, very high. And you take that then into the way that they play. You know, pace, possession, precision game is all about trying to create better scoring opportunities for your better shooters, getting them into the right places to take the right shots in space. And, you know, if that's the strategy by which you hurl, you're going to create more chances. And look, you're just going to create more scores. So when you add those two things together, and Limerick are a very, very good case in point here. Limerick had a fantastic development plan brought out maybe 5 or 6 years ago. I think it was called Raising the Treaty. Not too sure if it's the right name for it. Driven by Shane Fitzgibbon, driven by Joe McKenna, principally driven by JB McManus financially. They've had a fantastic schools program in their schools, driven. I think they might have the most teams in any Munster county in the Harty Cup at the minute. Arscoil Rí have won it a number of times. Look at the success of their minors and their county under 21s and now their seniors, and look at the success of their clubs. So I think when you have that high level of quality coaching, you simply have better players, better forwards, better way of playing. And I think the real icing on the cake for Limerick is the quality of the management team that John Kiley has pulled together and the way they approach playing the game. And when you get all of those things right, you are going to put yourself in a great position to be able to shoot 30 pints a game. The downside to that, I suppose, is there seems to be less goals at the minute, and I think I'll attribute that to one of the points you make, Willie, about the defensive screening and that. It probably stops goals, but maybe creates opportunities for pints. Yeah. One of the reasons you're saying is half back line mightn't follow out, and that. So, you know, players have more space, but players are able to shoot. There's more players now able to shoot from distance than there was at any stage I've seen hurling. So I'm not surprised by the score, and I'll suspect it will stay at that or grow. And you know, when I spoke the last day about the hurling being more dynamic, that with the exception of the full back line, the other 12 or 13 players will be, you know, more movement around the field. That'll even create more opportunities, I guess.
Yeah, so it's only going up, Michael. Would you be in agreement with that?
Absolutely, Willie. Like, I think the half back thing is a huge, huge part of playing it, though. Like, from playing half back for all my career, apart from my first 2 years and they found out I couldn't play as a forward, it evolved so much. Like, it used to just mark your man, stay in the same position, and then forwards used to rotate. Now they'd have forward line go back and help and try and congest their back line, and for a while you follow them, but then you realise you can't leave a big gap in front of your full back line. And when you stay back there, there's so many scoring opportunities. Like, you find yourself, you wouldn't score, I don't think I scored in championship for the first 6 years as a half back, and then you'd be coming out with 10 points of championship after that. Like, just, you end up with extra space and the confidence to go forward, and goalkeepers can pick you out then because the half forwards are leaving you. Yeah. So you're receiving the ball from puck outs as well, and
it's
a huge thing for it.
There's also the point, Michael, that when you leave off your half forward, right, so he's back forging around and you're leaving him off, you're protecting the goals. When he gets on the ball, if he's using the ball well, Garrod Hegarty gives brilliant ball in, Tom Morrissey, they're bypassing you to full forward line anyway, so you're not really saving all that much. It's not like Gaelic football. Like, I mean, I understand the theory behind it, but you don't necessarily intercept ball into them. Now, maybe you can turn around and double up on them, gobble them up when they get the ball. You know, maybe that's the thing. But like Kearney, Tom Morrissey, Garrod Hegarty, David Reedy from Clare, these lads are running amok in matches because they're getting free rolls and they're not being followed. So maybe that's that kind of tactics that's come into the game.
It's a game of chess. Well, you let them go 10 yards, but like, you're trying to stay beside them and also cover your full back line. And like, I know from previous managers, if my man had scored 2 or 3 points or was given in great ball, I'd be told to go up on him and not stay in your position, you know. So,
like, they watch Kearney run him up for so long. Like, I mean,
best
you wonder how.
Ever, like, you know.
I think, Willie, though, a lot of that is I've spoken of this a number of times now on different shows, Willie. This is where hurling is evolving too, and it's going to be very, very different looking, I think, maybe in about 5 years' time. And what you're seeing a little bit is that coaches really haven't worked out how to, I suppose, counter tactic what the likes of Kearney and some of those players are doing. I may not have the type of player to do it. And, you know, Clare are a case in point. Okay, David Reedy comes back to field. But it wouldn't make sense to bring Peter Duggan back to field when he's one of your more offensive weapons as wing forward. So you cannot put in tactics for everything to counter the opposition. But certainly the way the game's evolving now, there is more space. Even to the extent that, I don't know whether Michael would agree with me or not, but like looking at the games last Sunday, for the game last Sunday in particular, the amount of time players had on the ball to be able to give a 30-metre hurley pass was very unusual. Certainly 3 or 4 years ago, he wouldn't have got that time. And then when you look at the opposition, where are they in the field? You're looking at they're maybe back to field a little bit. So I think the coaching and the game planning at the minute is just evolving. And I think the next piece we will see to it is shutting down what you've just described.
Yeah, maybe that's the way it's going.
And on that, Willie, I've seen an article from Di Regan during the week. A lot of people saying that Slitter's too light now.
Yeah, you know, actually, funny enough, Christy O'Connor had some stats on that. So he said only 16 shots, and that's including frees. And that's across the two games of the weekend. We're beyond the 65. So, like, I mean, that's out of 214 shots. So, like, it's a tiny... Like, I thought it was the lighter ball until I saw that.
No, like, two pucks of ball from a goalie to a half forward or full forward, and it's over the bar. Look, that happens, all
right? That's always been the way,
but Di Regan's point was, like, in the 90s, that the ball being played for about 5 minutes because you'd only hit the ball 30 or 40 yards over your shoulder to the next man, and so far it might take 4 pucks to get up the pitch rather than 2 now.
Jeez, how heavy was the ball?
Yeah, look, them wet balls.
You'll never get a ball at full forward.
Them
at all.
Wet balls on a wet day, like, should they be dipping? And they were hard to hit 30 yards, you know. But the game's faster now. Like, the standard, I think, is higher than it's ever been in the county. And like, fair enough, the ball might go over the bar within 2 shots, but the goalkeeper's pucking out twice as fast as he ever did before. Like, he's not holding on to it for 2 or 3 minutes. It's coming straight out as quick, so it's in play just as much, I think, you know. So I don't know, I think it's nonsense. I don't think you can make a heavier slitter, you know.
Yeah, no, it is. Okay, right, we'll move on from that one anyways, because Noel McGrath has been doing media this week, and he's been talking about the replay and the extra time. And Jesus, lads, in both games, like, it became a lottery in extra time. Now, I know, because the championship's condensed, the game has to end on that day, or you have to attempt to end it that day. But they're out on their feet, lads, aren't they? Like, I mean, they're completely gone. They're gone at that stage. And Noel says it should be a replay. There's one thing everybody complains about, the GAA being the Grab All Association. This is one where they've taken this extra revenue out of it. So, like, you can't blame. Sometimes the GAA are always the kind of fall guy for everything.
Yeah.
But they've tried to end it on the day. And I don't want to go down the road of complaining about it. Because I actually think the extra time should be there. But I do take the point that these lads are completely out on their feet in that 20 minutes.
I think the second day should be game over. I think it should
be the extra time on the
day,
second.
You should be allowed this time. There, like, there's weeks allotted for a replay. So first day should go to full time replay, and then second day has to finish.
Right, because that's probably better. Yeah,
like, if you go into replay, really, there's 3 things. Lads are prone to injuries. You're going to lose the best players for the following week. The standard drops significantly because they're all so tired, you know. And then if you play a replay, it's such a good spectacle on the day. You're going to get a second match, so it's a win-win for Croke Park, you know.
Yeah.
You've seen lads dropping, and the standard did drop, and there's a lot of wides and extra time. And I just think, like, this game would be better this weekend if there wasn't extra time last.
If there hadn't have been,
because lads are going to be tired, and they could pick up injuries quickly now this weekend. So I think the second day, I understand GPA, the GAA have to, because fixtures are so limited. But I'd leave it a week.
Yeah, because there's a 3 week gap between the semi final and the final, Cheddar. So a replay would only make it two, which is well manageable, you know. So maybe Michael, I'd be in agreement with Michael that it has to end on the second day, the week after.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, I'd certainly take Noel McGrath's point, and I think he makes a very good point as well, that you lose a provincial championship and you're still in the championship as such, and, you know, you've progressed past that. Take Cork, for example, won a Munster championship, and had to play extra time, and look, it had a small bearing on their loss. It wasn't the only reason that they lost. I think there's a couple of other issues though around it as well, Willie, that need some discussion, and you know, Michael is touching on one of them. Like, we're trying to promote the game of hurling here, we're trying to grow the game of hurling in Ireland here, and look, what better way to do that than have more spectacles than there is there currently? And like, there are more games now than there used to be, but there's still not a huge amount of games. I mean, the hurling championship's going to be over. There's only two more games. There might have only been one more game after the weekend. So why not avail of that opportunity to, you know, promote it even further by having a replay? I think the other issue though is also important, that playing extra time suits big counties and suits big panels. Strangely enough, what I'm going to say next contradicts that, because I would have always put Cork as being you know, a very, very strong county with a huge amount of quality players, and as such have a very, very strong panel. Extra time in games suits strong panels, where, you know, you have maybe five players, your 20th player is as good as your 15th or your 13th player, and I think if that's the case, you know, the top four or five counties, this is going to suit them in that sense. They're always going to have bigger panels, maybe than the, you know, 7th, 8th or 9th or 10th county, you know, the Wexfords maybe, and Dublins, and I'm not saying that's where they stand in the rankings, I'm just making the point here. So I think from a number of aspects, and even the welfare of the players, and I actually hadn't considered what Michael was saying, that look, they have played extra time last Sunday, now you're expecting them to play a full game again next weekend, even from the welfare of players. And I know I don't want to play this up, because, you know, all of us would walk to play this match if we got the bloody chance, but it is an important point. You know, we're amateur players here. We're asked them to give an awful lot of their time, to perform to the best of their ability. They're under huge scrutiny now. And you play poorly in extra time or something like that, and you lose the game. And, you know, you get a savaging because of that, when maybe it has nothing to do with you. It's to do with, you know, just fatigue and so on. So I think there's a lot of reasons here why you could certainly look at the first day being a replay, yes.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, all the suits, the big panels. We thought Galway had a big panel. They're bringing Joe Clooney back on. Yeah. We thought Cork had a big panel. They're bringing Kearney, who was out on his feet, and Kingston back on, which you could understand Kingston. But then you have Clare bringing Shane O'Donnell back on. Like, I mean, this is a question I wanted to ask you, Cheddar, and you as well, Michael. But, like, I mean, is extra time... I don't ever remember extra time being planned for. Like, I remember you might bring on your five subs in normal time, but you'd never think, Jesus, there's 10 minutes to go, this is nip and tuck, I might save a sub for extra time. Because, like, it's unreal. And it's only Limerick that had the resources to actually really, their subs made the impact. Is there an element of panic when extra time comes? I remember in a Leinster club game with Portlaoise, Cheddar, I was brought off. You were probably added up against St. Bridget's. And then I was brought on again in extra time, at the start of extra time. Now, I was livid that I was brought off. And it was a freezing cold day. I was sitting for 20 minutes, freezing cold.
And then pop back on.
And then they want to bring me back on after me being livid that I was brought off. I ended up being brought on for extra time and brought back off again, because I was all over the place. I wasn't at the pitch of that game. I think the management that day panicked. They didn't think this, you know, didn't think this through. Is there an element of panic that might come in at that stage?
I know, I wouldn't think so. Not at the level that the current management are at. Well, they actually would have planned for that. I'd be surprised if they didn't. I think all managements would plan for that and should know that. Interesting, that's an interesting point that you make, Willie, because certainly when Kilkenny played below in Thurles, Kilkenny management thought that there was no extra time, I think, that day. But look, they would have planned for it to the extent that the level of detail managers go into now, and look, we saw that last weekend with John Kiley, the level of detail that they go into now would be phenomenal, and the attention to detail is just phenomenal at this stage. And one of those is the planning of the introduction of your substitutes. And, you know, Limerick are a case in point here. I don't want to talk about up here the whole time, but Limerick introduced a number of substitutes last weekend, which were either clearly direct replacements for the type of player that was playing in the system that they were playing in, or a player that was going to bring something completely new to the field at that stage, and I'm talking about Dowling here in this instance. So the level of thinking about how it is that the game now is 20, it's a 20 man game, and the impact that you can use your players to bring in and make an impact is important. And if you look at some of the players that went out, you know, Carney came out from Cork, he was a critical player for Cork, critical player to their game plan. They missed him. I'm not so sure that they should have took him off the field. And they may very well have found that Mark Ellis wasn't doing the same job. I think it was Mark Ellis might have replaced him, wasn't doing the same type of job. So replacing like for like in a system is really important. And that's why your preparation before the game is so important, to have the right type of players to be able to replace, particularly key players yeah. in the system. And certainly Carney was a key player in the Cork system.
Well, that's the interesting point. I think Dermot O'Sullivan was critical of that mm. during the week, in that like Ellis and O'Mahony came on and like they weren't direct replacement. So yeah. what your whole
Seamus
system
is, stayed on.
Yeah, he stayed on. So your whole yeah. system might be kind of getting messed up a little bit there. But like, I mean, that like that is interesting. Interestingly enough, lads, the stats say that the Munster champions again go yeah, out. No, like, sure. I mean, it's not some stat.
Just before you go off of that, Willie, I'd like to comment on Limerick. I'm very interested, and I'd love to know an awful lot more of what goes on in Limerick at the minute. You know, when you see the subs planning for Limerick, they generally speaking bring on all of the Pearcy players together. Is that because they have a real understanding between one another about, you know, how to play the game and play into one another? The generous speaking bring in Shane Dowling at a certain time in the game to bring something different to the game. And I'd love to be a fly in the wall and within the Limerick management just to find out the rationale for some of these decisions.
Yeah, yeah. What John Coyley is hugely impressive to me. Like, you hear from managers all the time saying, we've confidence in my panel, I've loads of confidence in my panel.
Yeah.
He's the only manager all weekend that showed it.
Yeah,
like, he didn't bring on a man again after taking him off. He actually brought on. It doesn't seem to matter the star he takes off. He has a player to bring on from. And if you're shot, like if I was a sub and a player came off and went back on ahead of me, I'd be sick. Like
yeah.
you're training all year. He's telling you he has confidence in you all year to the media, to yourselves in the dressing room, and it doesn't show when the proper yeah. time comes. And most importantly, so like Limerick are in a great place. They went through the whole league with Nolan and Pearcy lads, and it's just made them stronger because when they all came back. They had the five for their places. You'd enrolled seven new lads to come in who are all brilliant hurlers. So like at the moment he's backing up everything he's saying. Yeah. Not many managers do, you know.
No.
So.
And they're just very lucky with the squad that they have. They're yeah. very lucky, Limerick, yeah. in that they, like we mentioned earlier on, they had such a good league without an Pearcy lads. Mm. It's obvious 1 and 1 equals 2. When the Pearcy lads come back, think of the squad they're going yeah. to have, and that's the way it's completely kind of.
I disagree with you, Willie. I don't think they're lucky. I don't think Limerick are lucky.
For the reasons you pointed out, yeah, with all the good work.
This is going on for 10 years. This is not happening by chance. And on the day is not happening by chance. It is huge attention to detail about preparation and how you prepare for games and that. And I think, Michael, you make a good point. I think it's really, really important that even in discussions with the team that you explain that to the team. Because, you know, I take your point. You know, all players see themselves as being first and want to be first team players. And suddenly you see somebody come off and he comes back on again in front of you. And you think, well, hell, you know, I'm not going to be given a chance here. Look, it's difficult to explain that to players, and it's difficult for players to comprehend that, but at least when you do communicate it to them, they can understand it a little bit better.
Yeah, no, you have to communicate it. Just to finish up on the top of the show here, lads, we talked about this on Monday, and we're talking about Shane Dowling's brilliant speech after the match, and it was inspirational, and I loved the way he gave the little kind of cut of Kylie, it was a little reminder to Kylie, well, I hope John kind of keeps that performance in mind, you know, for the next day. And wasn't that brilliant?
Yeah.
But one thing he did say, he says, I want to be in the parade, and I want to be on the field. Every player wants that, yeah. you know, and he wasn't just talking about himself. He's like, I mean, he was just being honest. But would it be an idea, Cheddar, for the whole squads to parade? Like, I mean, that's we talked on Monday about what a special thing parading behind the band in Croke Park is. And as you go under the canal, the whole canal stands to cheer you. And then you walk around the corner to the Cusick, and that's the same thing. And it's an experience of a lifetime. Even coming around the Hill 16, I was lucky enough to play Dublin in a Leinster final, and the hill goes mad. You never forget that. But should the whole squad, because it's a squad game now and 20 are going to play, should the whole squad not experience that? Would that, like, and I don't think aesthetically it would look any worse. It's just a longer line behind the band.
Yeah, no, I agree. I fully agree with that, Wooly. You know, how can you say it's number 23, 24, 25? And look, the panel is only 26 anyway. It's not, as you say, it's not 40 or 46.
Yeah.
I don't see a difficulty with that. And I think it's just really respect for the players and a recognition of what they've contributed to the team. And particularly when you look at it now, you know, so from 16 to 20 is really going to contribute to the team here. Yet he doesn't have that opportunity to work behind the band. And it is a huge thing for players. I fully agree with you. And go back to your earlier point, Willie. I think John Kiely learned a lot about the game in NS, about picking players and emotion and all of those things. I think he learned an awful lot that day that stands him to good stead. And I think he'll play players now that fits his system first, or unless he wants to change his system, because that's what I saw last Sunday.
Yeah, no, definitely. Even meeting the president, Michael, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, here's the thing, because obviously it's in the rules, and we were speculating, because Kiely is obviously forward-thinking and does look at his squad, would Limerick just do it and take the fine and say we're all in this together? Wouldn't it be a great kind of psychological thing for the squad to go, listen, we don't care, this is going to be a $5,000 fine, we're going to reward you and the lads that are coming on, and you experience all our final day and meet the president and parade behind the thing, and we're all, and everyone in then for the national anthem, then the subs break off the field and the lads take it on.
Oh, absolutely. Well, like, same with you, Leinster final, when I got to parade, it's memories that I'll never forget. And I remember, like, lads were nervous. I said, lads, take it in. I was looking up to the crowd.
Oh, I loved it too.
As you know, no. I was looking up and said, like, take it in, don't have your head down, and like, you don't know when you're going to be back there again. And it's such a, it was like one of my greatest memories, and I'm all for the whole panel, because we all trained together all year, and I don't think anyone should have to miss out on that. Just like, as you said, it's a bigger line, I don't see the big deal.
Yeah,
and pay the president
for,
you know,
for the 2003 Leinster final. I had been injured that whole Leinster championship after the first round, and I watched the starting team doing the parade, and I felt sick. Sick, like, I was like, this is lousy. And then the team photo, but now the squads are in the team photo, which is at least that's something for them. But then there was the team photo, I'm not in that, and I was like, oh, I was sitting there all depressed about how everything that I'm missing out on.
You wouldn't feel as part of it, like, you know. No. I think if the whole panel's in it, you're all in together, as say, and everyone feels part of it. And like, I've been sub at times, and it's hard, it's a very hard position to be in, you know. And like, I know you always say you're part of it and you're training with them, but you want to be involved in the biggest parts of every game, and at least that's one thing you can say we've all did together, and you cherish it together and remember it together. So I'd be all for it. I'd love to see that happen.
I think we'd all agree with it. And look, I think all players, I think all GA people would agree with that. It's a fantastic occasion. Michael and Woolley, both of you have had that experience, so you know what it is. And certainly it's a memory for life, and that, and a memory for your family for life, and that as well. I suppose I'd urge a small little bit of caution, like, where do you stop? And I'll just draw the example at the minute. There's a picture in the paper of Paul Brown having his ACL operation, I think, yesterday or the day before. I've spoken highly about Paul Brown a number of times in previous shows here. Here's a guy that's going to miss out on probably one of the greatest days of Limerick for a long number of years, or for even for a short number of years. You know, so where do you stop? You know, as far as I'm concerned, Paul Brown has carried Limerick on days when they didn't have a whole lot of other people to carry them. Should Paul Brown also march behind the band? Maybe.
I'm crutches at the back here, right?
I suppose, you know, you just need to.
No, I know what you mean.
Right, for the optics and all of that. But some recognition of injured players in the panel, because that's even worse. They're not even able to train for it, and, you know, they've no part to play in it. And look, just on that point, I suppose we'd all wish Paul the best of luck and with his operation and that, and certainly we'd all love to see him back hurling again.
Yeah, no, exactly right. We'll leave it on that, so Cheddar, and we will talk about the match next.
And the game takes on, can very, very often, and take on a life of its own. What's tactics? I mean, you've got to make decisions and you've got to decide what you're going to do, and at the end of the day, you hand it over to the players and the players play, you know? The game was fast, was furious, it had everything really, you know, and you don't have too much influence on what's happening. What happened last year, it goes out the window, or the year before, or whenever it was. Tipperary, don't go away. The air is the air. And the game takes on, can very, very often, and take on a life of its own.
Right, lads, well, the first place to start when we're analysing this is to try and discuss how Galway are going to deal with the loss of McInerney, because he's done his calf, lads, and there's no calf muscle going to heal in six days. Joe Canning will be back, you'd be fairly sure, so let's work on the basis that Canning's back, McInerney's out. I've read people speculating that Joe Cooney could go back centre back, lads. There are reading elsewhere that Padraig Mannion will go number six, Paul Killeen will come back into the corner, Sean Loftus might go wing back where Mannion is leaving, which that seems more plausible to me than Joe Cooney potentially going back. But he has a history in the back. He's played in the backs before. So I suppose that's our starting point.
Yeah, I'd go with the second option, Loftus to the wing and Park Mannion centre. A brilliant hurler. He can read a game brilliantly. And look, McInerney's a huge loss, Willie, but... You just have to find. You have to follow Tony Kelly. He struggled on Tony Kelly at times anyway last week. So they're going to have to look at options there. And he keeps coming short. And who's going to follow him? Well, you can't take your centre back out of there. But I definitely would have someone marking him and maybe pull someone back on Tony Kelly, because he caused murder at centre forward last week. So I know McInerney's a brilliant hurler and a huge loss, but he did struggle at times himself last week. So I think Galway are strong enough to deal with it in the back line in defence.
Alright, okay, so would you agree with that rejig, Cheddar?
No, I'd probably look at it a little differently, Woolley. The first thing I think Galway management might look at is how do we set up to play Clare here. Do we set up with our normal game plan and react to whatever's in front of us, or do we just go seize the initiative here? It's a new game. There are some learnings from the old game. Do they take the learnings on board and sort of set up themselves separately, take the game to Clare and grab the game at a scruff and they can go for them? Or do they set up as they were? If they do set up as they were, I do take the point that Gerard McInerney is a much stronger player playing on a physical centre forward, where it's one-to-one stuff. And he may not be the player. If Clare set up like they did last Sunday when they moved to a sweeper, well, look, Galway are going to be playing with a sweeper. That's just the way it is. Is Gerard McInerney the right player to play as a sweeper? I'd probably say not. So if Padraig Mannion is the player to play that, he's going to be six. He is going to end up being the sweeper. So I think you have to give an awful lot of thought to that, first of all. Try and second-guess Clare. If you're going to go with the same game plan and just react to the way Clare or whatever Clare do, then you're going to go with broadly the same game plan, and then you're going to make the changes thinking of what Clare are going to do. So I think it is something along the likes of, bear in mind, Padraig Mannion went centre back in Thurles against Kilkenny when they had to bring Gerard McInerney out and TJ Reid because he was catching too much ball.
Right.
So he is that type of player. And look, sweepers are, they have to have certain competencies. They have to be very, very, very good first touch, particularly close to the ground on the low ball, very quick to go front foot, very good hand pass, very good short hurley pass, but particularly very good vision and very good sort of effective tackling if you're a second tackler in that as well. So you'll be looking at all your players. Who's the best man to play if we're going to fall into this position? What's my best option here? What's my strongest team to put out? And now I'm just going to answer the question. If Galway go with their normal game plan and they play six backs in their positions, I probably think Padraig Mannion will go centre back and somebody will come in wing back, bearing in mind the way Clare play. A lot of the Clare players are very, very mobile. You've got to have mobile backs, not in all of the positions, but certainly in most of the positions, to be able to react quickly to the clear movement.
Okay, right. So obviously, Killeen, it's either between Killeen or Loftus will go wing back. Yeah. I say Killeen to cornerback, which wouldn't make sense because there's nobody out of the full back line. But how did this happen with Galway, lads? Because it's not like Galway ever haven't played against the sweeper. They've shown they're more than capable of playing against the sweeper, and that Hart is always given the role. Was it the mid-game switch that threw them, and was Hart given a man-marking role? And how did it end up that McInerney was operating as a spare man?
Look, with 15 minutes gone in the game, Willie, it was 1-7-1. That 9-point course again, I think, Galvin went back for sweepers, Clare, and it just, Galway didn't change anything. They kept playing what got them there, but you have to adapt and evolve as the game has gone on. Skell kept his puckouts going down the half-forward line, but because Galvin was sweeping up behind, all the lads had to do was break the ball, and he was on top of it. And then they were ball after ball into Jonathan Glynn. Jonathan Glynn was brilliant. He was immense during the game. But it seemed to be option one all the time.
Yeah.
And all the lads were doing then was breaking the ball down from... I've marked Jonathan Glynn loads. He's right-handed. He's very awkward in the air. His arm span is so big that he just holds you back and puts one arm up in the air. It's very difficult to mark. But you play him, not the ball. and all you do is slap the hand, and that's what they were doing. Like, they were smart enough, McInerney was smart enough, play him, ball was breaking down, and Colm Gavin was sweeping up all the time.
And you get away with doing little things like that.
Absolutely, absolutely, because it looks like you're going for the ball, you know, and just a little slap of the
hand. You're spoiling him.
Absolutely, because you will not catch a ball over that man's head. And they stopped playing Conor Whelan, and like if you play the wings, you're beating that sweeper. And the sweeper was just, Colm Gavin was sweeping him in front and getting all the breaking ball, and Galway just didn't adapt fully. So
yeah,
like from what was getting them all the scores, and then Clare changed it and Galway didn't, and it just they'll have to work it out now for this weekend.
I was surprised about Willie. I was surprised when a team goes sweeper, as a, you know, I've explained this earlier on in the programme here. To generally speaking, pick a certain type of player who is well able to play a sweeper. You'll rarely see a big, tall player with poor first touch, poor vision playing sweeper. And one of the things you've got to do to start with is free up a defender who doesn't want to be a sweeper. In other words, your corner forward has got to pick up Colm Gavin. And not let him a complete free roll in the half back line to be picking up breaking ball, surging front foot, looking up, popping passes, drilling 30 metre, 40 metre passes to players. You've got to force Clare, force Jack Brown or whoever else, and I'm not saying Jack Brown wouldn't make a good sweeper,
I take your point.
I'm saying he wasn't picked to be a sweeper, so he's obviously not better than Colm Gavin.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing you got to do. And the second thing you got to do is use your own ball better. Interestingly, Woolley, I'd say Davy has a bit of a smile on his face after last weekend, after all the hassle, because at the end of the day, Clare played almost the way Davy coaches.
Yeah.
And I'd say he had a bit of a smile on his face after all the hassle. He was listening to about sweepers and all of that. But at the end of the day, the sweeper fixed Clare last weekend, and if they hadn't done it, they wouldn't have been beaten out of the park. I was surprised that Galway didn't do that. In other words, put somebody on Colm Gavin and force Clare to play a different man as sweeper in a different position. And equally, you're a sweeper, and the way you distribute ball is really, really important then, because, you know, putting it down into anywhere around the zone where the sweeper is doesn't make good sense.
Yeah.
And I just thought that I would have huge time for Micheál Donoghue and huge time for Franny Ford. Franny Ford plays the pace possession game, has done so for a good number of years. I know it's his favourite way of playing hurling. And I just thought that they would have worked out that. Now, on the other hand, that I was on the sideline enough times myself to know something that was glaringly obvious, but I didn't have the solution to fix it at the time, you know. So sometimes it's easier for the man in the stand to look at these things and say, well, there's the fix, you know, when you're on the sideline in the heat of battle, when, you know, there's probably a couple of other things going wrong that you've got to fix first before you actually get to that. But that was one of the things I was surprised about.
Right, okay. Did you see the stats under puckouts, lads? Galway's puckouts. So Clare won 39 of 51, 76%. Very impressive. Now, they obviously had that extra man, but like Galway had it, but Galway continuously went long to win 25 of 49, 51% on puckouts.
Yeah.
Like, man, that's outrageously bad numbers on your puckouts. But Galway seem to be married to a certain thing, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I just, Scale doesn't, I know it's not his fault, he's been told what to do.
He's a booming puckout merchant, but maybe he's not good at the smaller or the short ones.
And if Galvin's sweeping in behind, like, as a halfback, I know I'm just going to play the hurl, play the man, let the ball go straight behind me, and Colm Gavin's going to be behind me all day. And they're clever enough to do that, like, because Galway forwards are quite tall and they have the height advantage over Clare. And it just didn't make sense to me, like, when you can play the likes of Park Mannion on the wing and let them work up the lines, and they're so good, they're really good hurlers, and they when they create the great scores like that, that's what was happening, you know. They were going through the middle, finding Cohn, finding Mannion, and it just stopped fully, you know. And this high 50-50 ball, like, when you're in control of possession as a goalkeeper, you don't give it away cheaply. Like, it's the same as sidelines and everything. You have to work on these things. It's one time you have the ball. And it was an old thing in hurling, you just, everything 50-50. But these days, it's involving, and you have to find that spare man. And if you've only five at the back, like, there's space there to find a man.
Yeah.
And as you're watching it, I was watching it, and there was space there between the lines to find men, and
he didn't want to.
I'm not sure if he doesn't want to, but he was being told to go
but
on.
Like, but wouldn't it make perfect sense, because he's got this boom in puckout, and that's his go-to, that they would push somebody up on Gavin then, and at least have Gavin covered for the puckout, and not just be driving your puckout up to 7 versus 6.
Mm.
Do you know, is there any way around that? Because it just, 51% cheddar, like, you can't stand over those puckout numbers.
It's interesting you said, Willie, because we actually spoke about this a lot on the programme last week, that, you know, there's obviously positives being able to drive the ball long, but if you can't mix up that with a short game, you know, the opposition will choke you, and particularly a sweeper will just choke you. They'll say, thanks very much, turn over the ball, and it'll lead to a score. Interestingly, in, you know, one of the better people to deliver a mix of puck outs is probably Anthony Nash, and he was caught out badly at the start of the game the last day as well.
Yeah.
But look, we're talking about Galway here. Look, particularly when you have Johnny Glynn inside in front, you could go just play to the big man, play off the breaks. And, you know, you have so many players then in the drop zone that the sweeper is not as important then. You know, there's going to be an awful lot of people around the ball. It's going to be a real rook ball. It mightn't be a very nice way to look at hurling, but look, it's one way to go. But I think Galway need to look at an awful lot more. You can still go a little bit shorter. You can go to midfield with loose men around midfield, which is what Anthony Nash was trying to do against Limerick, except Limerick had it well planned of how to cut that out. But I think that as they go along, particularly against very, very well coached teams, just having a long movement puck out will not serve you well. And even if you can go for distance against Johnny Glynn, you know, Michael has explained about how to touch the arm, put the ball on the floor, and then have real quality cornerbacks jumping on the ball and working the ball out through the defence. So just having one option on the puck out anymore, it's not a great place to be going into an All-Ireland, is all I'll say. And it is a certain risk to Galway.
Yeah.
Now, matchups as well, said earlier, they stuck Johnny Glynn out and Shane Amory in the second half. There's about a foot height difference there, and he caught three balls. But I don't think Clare will leave him on him next time. You know, I think Dave McInerney will follow Johnny Glynn wherever he goes, or Cleary, one of the bigger men, is just going to follow him, because you can't allow that matchup, even if it's for 10 minutes, because too much can happen in them few minutes. You could
just switch on puck outs. I mean, that's not a big, even what you've explained is easily done. Shane Amory could go centre back,
yeah, exactly,
and clear the out just for the puck out, yeah, and then switch back to their natural positions again. And you're right, you know, that was surprising that Clare didn't at least maybe double team, and bear in mind that the player back there, and just break the ball to floor and that, because Johnny Glynn is a serious handful. I think I described his hand before as being a bit of a JCB book, and he's proven me right on that one.
He definitely is. Like, I mean, but maybe the temptation, because he's so good, is almost working against Galway now that they're playing the sweeper. So Galway have to say, right, this won't work as well with a sweeper. We thought this was going to work, and it worked for 20 minutes and it was flying it. They were very slow to change that then, weren't they?
Yeah, as Shatter said, I've never been a manager on the sideline when these things happen. I know they're glaringly obvious, but it's hard to make changes so quickly in such a high tempo game. And Mio Dunne, who has a week now to solve this problem, and they have the hurlers there really to sort it out. It's just, it's going to be a huge tactical battle on whoever learned the most from these games, you know. So
yeah,
I don't know the answer. Do you start, like, does a corner forward sacrifice his game and come out and mark Galvin, you know, and force a corner back to be the spare man, because they're not going to have two of you marking each other?
But was McInerney the spare man then? Is that what we're saying? Because it's hard to tell on the television. Like, I mean, because Aidan Hart is a bloody good sweeper.
Yeah.
So how was Aidan Hart not a bloody good sweeper? Like, I would have thought this Colm Galvin going back to Galway wouldn't have knocked him off in the slightest.
Yeah, but you've got to look at who Aidan Hart is marking. Aidan Hart was marking David Reedy, who was a link man between the fence. So now Gerard McInerney is going to be pulled down to your half forward line if you're marking him.
Right.
So there's a whole knock on effect here of these type of changes. And this is where the pre planning prior to a game like that, and trying to second guess what the opposition does. And that brings me back to my original point. Galway could very well say, look, let's take this game to Clare. Let us bring something different. And I'm just going back to Limerick and Cork. Unfortunately, wasn't at the game on Sunday, but I saw Seamus Flanagan turning up in the middle of the field an awful lot. I haven't seen him in the middle of the field in all of the games he heard this year, and I've seen him live a good number of times. And certainly Limerick brought something to Cork. They seem to have sacrificed Damien Cahillane in the back line. If Damien Cahillane is not going to be able to carry ball at speed out of our defence to hurt us up the field, and yet they had extra bodies around the middle of the field. I suspect Galway might come with, you know, some little X factor like that, that gains the initiative, that now forces Clare to do something. And sometimes when you gain that and get confidence into your team and go for it, and look, Cork had that chance last Sunday. They were 6 points up and just didn't go for it. And sometimes when you get, and Galway had it obviously against Clare the first day as well. But Galway may come with something like that. They certainly have the players to do it. And look, there's a lot of other interesting things sort of coming out here. I'd probably describe the Galway style of hurling at the minute maybe as the Kilkenny style of hurling, but with more enhancements on it. And certainly the movement of Mannion around the forward as a free roll, and the movement of Joe Canning at centre forward, maybe say coming further out the field, is a little bit different than what we would have seen Kilkenny doing. But generally speaking, it's around six backs playing their positions, a defensive midfielder, Johnny Cohen, and an offensive midfielder, and six forwards in with great mobility around the field. But generally speaking, playing their positions, with the exception maybe of Mannion and but you know,
Joe Cooney drops a bit too.
And Joe Cooney drops, correct. You know, and it's gas that type of game plan, you know, 115 or 20 All Irelands, and is probably maybe a little bit out of date now, bearing in mind what we've seen with Clare, with Limerick, and with Cork. So Galway, you know, have exceptionally, they have incredible players, big players, incredibly skillful players, long striking, everything going for them. But may need to bring a little bit more to the table next weekend to beat Clare.
Yeah, it's great to have a clash of styles, isn't it? Because I think it would be boring if everyone played like Limerick and Cork. Like, I mean, it's lovely to watch, but there's no harm having the big man in there too. I do think they obviously have to do something about Galvin, because he's so smart with the ball when he does get it. He's the we talk about goalkeepers setting up attacks. Galvin's that little bit further out the field, given the very same, and he's free, and like, his use of the ball is just exceptional.
Yeah, in the first half now, I was a little disappointed with his use of the ball. He's so good that the standards are so high, he expects so much of him. He gave a few away that would not be like him at all, like, you know.
He gave Kelly two lovely ones to get him into the game.
Look, they're club mates, you know, they're well, they're good friends, you know.
They're not club mates, they're good friends.
They
came
up to
the ranks,
true, we're clear. But again, he gave a few balls away that I wouldn't expect of him. But again, I wouldn't, in a second day, if he gets space, he'll hurt you, you know. And he broke up Galway's play, which is the main thing as a sweeper. But he'll use the ball brilliantly this weekend if he's there.
Yeah. So there's a way of looking at this, right? So Galway were strong favourites to win the first day. Cheddar, you called it right that it wouldn't be an easy win. It wouldn't be much in it, and there wasn't much in it. But at the start of the game, it looked like it was men against boys at that stage. So now Galway have learnt the lesson. They know the Galvin thing, that now the betting's actually gone in where the handicap's only two and it's much closer. That Galway will be looking at this thinking, right, we were favourites last week, we might have got caught in the end. They had three goal chances. Glynn across to Colin Mannion didn't go to hand, ended up in a point. Conor Cooney should have gone lower instead of giving it the
Glynn
perfect height for Toohey. And Jason Flynn, Glynn had one, and Jason Flynn had one that he put over the bar that was like a bit like Aaron Galland's one, where he on the turn. Like, I mean, Galway don't even usually get three goal chances. They had a whole rake of wides. Galway will be thinking, this isn't panic stations for Galway by any manner of means, Cheddar.
No, and I wouldn't suggest that they should change a whole lot. You know, that wouldn't make sense to change a lot. I think they do need to change some little things and change up some little things. And, you know, one or two of the things that they might look at might be the way Kearney plays for Cork, bringing that sort of third person back to field and, you know, working the ball through the lines a little bit tighter in that. So, look, particularly Johnny Glynn gives you an awful lot of options like that, because if you want to pull your players back to field and shoot from distance, you need a savage competitive player up front that you know, if a defender's on the back foot and he wants to lamp it long, that's not going to come back down your throat again. And even if you knock it up in the air to Johnny Glynn, you can be sure of one thing, it's not going to be easily won, and it's not going to come out easily. So, you know, I think Galway, with a few, I suppose I call them tweaks to their team, could change their team a lot. But bear in mind the Leinster final and the replay in Kilkenny, the first half in Turles, you know, they were excellent hurling that day. And it's not that they played poorly the last day. They played some excellent hurling earlier on. But they did seem to get stumped with the extra man and with the sweeper. And obviously the injuries to them seemed to knock them out of their stride a little bit too easy for All-Ireland champions, is what I would say.
Yeah, maybe it did. So, like, I mean, the way you look at it now is the big battle the last day was Doughty Burke versus Conlon. Who shaded that? They won a half each.
Yeah.
Would you call that a draw with a lot riding on this one?
Probably Conlon scraped it for me. Like, right. First half, the ball wasn't going in. It was scrappy. He was surrounded by players. Second half, he loves that run. He stays in the centre in front of the ball, runs to the left of that corner back position, comes onto the ball, and that was the ball going in the second half. And he's impossible to stop because he throws the ball out so far. It's hard to block. And I thought like three quick points in succession in the second half really got Clare going and a bit of confidence there. And I'd be screaming at them to hit the ball in more to him, you know.
Galway had been warned about that tactic. It's not like that wasn't the most obvious tactic Clare have. Yeah. And under the Cusick stand, he runs amok in the second half.
Well, I suppose that's what I'm talking about, the sweeper. The type of sweeper and his confidence are critically important.
Yeah.
And Michael is spot on here. that's John Conlon's game. He's played most of his hurling at right wing forward and was a very, very good one, obviously. And, you know, if you look at the way Clare played in Thurles, they moved Podge out the field, left that space free on the right shoulder looking at him of John Conlon and pumped the ball in there. And, of course, it's very, very difficult to defend against that. But, look, Galway know that. If they set up like this again on Sunday, Galway know that. They're going to have a sweeper. So once a Clare half-back or Podge or the sweeper or anything that gets the ball on the Clare half-back line, you're going to edge maybe 10 or 15 metres to your left side just to be able to cut off that type of ball. Or even if Conlon wins it, you're going to double mark him coming into the corner. And look, you know, John Conlon, after having a poor second half against Cork, but bear in mind, little ball went into him, really turned his game around. He's having a fantastic year and he's a real go-to player. Not alone is he a ball catcher like Johnny Glynn, but he's also a finisher. So it would make sense to cut off whatever he's doing, because look, he's going to hurt you. You don't.
Yeah, exactly. So is there an element, we haven't really talked too much about Clare, like, I mean, you can imagine Davy Fitz, after the impact he made, he'll come in for Malone in midfield maybe. But like, I mean, Shanahar and Ian Galvin might be kept in reserve. Again, Shanahar's only back, but they played well. Like, I mean, do Clare double bluff Galway thinking they're going to play the sweeper and start hitting them hard without it and then go back to it, you know what I mean? Keep Galway guessing. It was very obvious for them just to start straight away with it, but then again, if they don't start straight away with it, Johnny Glynn gets a goal, they'll be absolutely killed. So
pokeouts are huge, really, for them. Like, you've seen, they got three pokeouts intercepted in the first 10 minutes. Like, I don't think it was all Donald Toohey's fault. They were very static. You want to hit a defender when he's moving, and they got caught planting their feet a few times. But Galway are so clever, they leave that gap. They sort of tempt you to hit that man from 10-15 yards away.
Oh,
and
yeah,
they cut out the space.
Yeah,
they're so good at it. But there's not many options if Clare want to go long from pokeouts. Peter Duggan was immense under a few, but I think they'll have a man there to stop him. He was on Aidan Hart for a while and he just beat him in the air, you know. And I think they might put Mannion on him if he's not centre back, just to stop him winning primary possession.
Because would have thought McInerney was the man for him, match, the right matchup. Yeah. Like, I mean, that's
a weird.
That's
what they did in Kilkenny. Yeah. TJ Reid went in forward from once when Hogan went on centre forward. TJ Reid went forward. I'd say the next two or three puck outs and clearance from defence, and they weren't easy ones. These were up in the air, and TJ Reid won them. And in honesty, he destroyed Park Mannion in that 10 or 15 minutes. They had to move Mannion and brought Garrod McInerney out on them, and like that. Look, it stopped that air threat. Now TJ had to go further out the field to try and get that type of ball. Look, you talk about Clare have some interesting things themselves here. Like, you know, John Conlon, Aaron Shanahar, I know, like, we played against him when he was very, very young, and he's in serious, serious threat with a huge ability to be able to turn quickly, eyeball you, break or tackle, and go for goal. And, you know, he's unfortunate to get an injury here. But look, let's just consider the Clare full forward line for a minute. If you had John Conlon full forward and Aaron Shanahar as two post players in the corner of the big D, and you had the likes of Shane O'Donnell as a sniffer out in front of them, now you can withdraw your half forward line way back the field here. That forces Galway now to play four full back line, because there's no way you'd leave those three with that type of room inside. So there's a lot of setups here that Clare can bring to the table as well, different than what they had last Sunday, and still be a good screen here, good defensive screen that I think, you know, could equally cause Galway serious problems. Cool. But Clare probably don't want to go high. I was surprised by how many high balls they did. But I'm going back to Michael's point. Once they picked up the ball in the half back line and started to drill those shoulder height 30 metre hurley passes, you know, that takes a lot of the power away from some Galway defenders. You put it up in the air and now you're playing the game, you know, at their strengths.
Yeah, no, exactly. All right, great stuff, lads. We'll come back here and we'll get predictions off you.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought that up now, because there's no such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
You do.
No, we don't.
But you didn't let Shamey talk at a hurley launch one day.
Yeah, but hold on a second now. He was at a hurley launch, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a media ban if he can't talk at that.
Absolutely not. I think you guys need to do your job. Don't depend on us guys for quotes, you know.
Okay.
Earn your living like the rest of us.
But if he's at a media day and he says to the media that I'm not allowed to talk, then he's obviously on a ban.
Well, I think he's carrying a mixed message.
Alright, we'll get Paddy Power predictions here, lads. So Galway have gone into 4-7, Clare 7-4. So, like, I mean, Clare were nearly 3-1 last week, and now they're nearly 2-1. So the bookies are still strongly favouring Galway, and the handicap is -2. And if I was a betting man, I'd be taking that Galway -2 to win by 3 or more. I would be all over it, because I think they'll have learnt lessons. And I think the first 20 minutes showed that when Galway are on it, that they're on a, no disrespect to Clare, they're on a level above Clare. management got them back into the game with their switches. I think Galway will be ready for it this time.
Yeah,
who am I to say, right?
I'm going for Galway myself, Willie. I think like they should have been 16, 17 points up in that first 15 minutes. They missed two goal opportunities, had a rake load of wides, and then they didn't know how to deal with the sweeper. They have a week to deal with that now. I know they're going to be missing Gerard McInerney, but I think they have a really strong panel, and I just think as all Ireland champions, they'll have that experience to get them through and learn more through this week.
Yeah, it's actually an interesting thing now that McInerney will be gone, and I'm 100% sure he's gone, lads, because he limped off with a calf injury. Like, there's no even discussing this. So who does mark Duggan then? Because Duggan gave Aidan Hart all he wanted of it. You want Hart as your sweeper. So now you're looking at Loftus-Mannion, or who's on the other, Loftus-Mannion or Hart will be the sweeper. So it's Mannion or Loftus to mark Duggan. So you might have to go with Mannion on Duggan then. And Mannion, you want centre back. Well, so then, you know, they are kind of the things.
You might look at Killeen for Killeen is a man marker.
Tareedy maybe or someone.
Tough individual. Yeah. Doesn't necessarily need to be the height of Duggan. Duggan's a very, very tall player. He's 6'3" or 4'5", I would think, and a very, very skillful for a big man. But Peter Duggan in the past has had some great games followed by some average games. Hasn't been consistent in terms of being a game breaker player. He was a game breaker player last Saturday, there's no doubt about that. But I think, you know, you don't necessarily need to have the one player to match up to that. It'd be good if you had, but you don't necessarily need to that. You can, you know, different ways of figuring him out. Interestingly, that sort of causes Clare a little bit of a problem as well, because you kind of use Peter Duggan as a defensive screen in front of your own half back line, because he's so important to you up the field. So you could hurt him like that. You could play a player out in front of him to be able to take outlet ball from your backs and that, and he's not going to track you back, and you could force him back the field. So there's a number of ways, I suppose, by which they could keep Peter Duggan very busy. I think the odds are more realistic now. They certainly weren't last weekend. And I think Clare were very lucky last weekend that they knew how to play the sweeper system so well, and that they were well wedded to it in previous years. They were very lucky that they were able to rely on that. I think Galway just have a little bit more. I do think they'll take learnings from last week. They seem to be in a little bit inconsistent in games. They'll play brilliantly as they did against Kenny for a while, and then struggle to get over the line.
Yeah.
Played brilliantly last Saturday and struggled to get over the line. Hard to put your finger on that, whether the work rate drops and the intensity drops. I know the change to the sweeper did definitely change them and did definitely cause them some problems. I expect to learn from that and have something in place to be able to keep the, I suppose, the consistent performance and the tackling and the tracking back and all of that to a very, very high level. You know, so just was it that they were so far ahead, they dropped intensity, were all Ireland champions. It can happen very easily. You can say all of these right things before the match, but in the course of the match, you know, when things are going so well for you and you're so far ahead, when you drop your guard a little bit like that, it's very, very hard to switch it back on again.
Yeah.
So look, you know, are some things like that playing in this? Look, we're not so sure. We'll probably find that out at the weekend.
Yeah. So who are you going to go for then, Cheddar?
I think I'll go for Galway. I just think that the bigger spread of threat across their team. I said this last week, and I also said, I think maybe last week, that the Clare full back line will need some protection. They didn't get it earlier on. So I think they're going to have to be protected to some extent. That's going to mean either defensive, Clare playing defensive with keeping wing backs way back the field. Galway are going to know they're going to have to do something. They're not going to expose their full back line at that again. Whether Galway can exploit that, they definitely have the players to do it, and I give it to Galway. But again, it'll be very close.
Yeah, okay, just to finish up here, lads, we talked about Gerlach Nan. Maybe there's a little bit of gamesmanship on about Thurles, but is it fair to say that Thurles is a bigger advantage to Galway than it is to Clare? That Clare seemed to have it in their heads, or a Croke Park team, and they did in 2013. They weren't back again until last week and performed above themselves, whereas maybe Thurles takes that with a Croke Park team motivation or kind of psychology away from them.
No, I wouldn't see anything like that in it at all. I think the level of preparation and the psychological preparation of teams going into games like that, all of those angles we covered, Willie, I don't see that as an issue. Bear in mind that Clare's last game in Thurles was a fantastic game from to beat Tipperary there, and have a recent good record there.
They lost the Munster final there then after that.
They did, but I don't think it is, if that, you know, Thurles is a real poor hunting ground.
Yeah. Okay, right, fair enough. Right, we'll come back here with Joe from Paddy Power. Joe, how's it going?
Not bad, thanks.
Where do we start on with this, Joe? Because Galway Clare, obviously, Galway were very strong favourites last week. they're not as strong favourites this week. I know the handicap's gone in from 4 to 2. What has happened to the odds?
Yeah, so obviously I could go over, well, to a lot of people they weren't value any means, and Clare were kind of crazy odds given given how the teams have gone so far. But just go away sort of class and their dominance last year and so far this year had us thinking they were firm favourites. They've shortened in a lot, or Clare have shortened rather. They've gone into 7 to 4 where they were 11 to 4 last week, and go away into 4 to 7 when they were 4 to 11 before last week. So there's been a big cut, given there was only 1 week in the difference, but the way the game went, obviously we're expecting a much tighter one this week, with the draw again there being 9 to 1. Obviously we had 2 draws last week in the hurling, and if we get a third it'd be amazing, but you wouldn't be surprised all the same. So that'd be 9 to 1 for us to get another round of extra time in Thurles.
Right, okay, that's it. Like, I mean, but nearly you'd say if you believed in Galway last week at -4, there's no reason to say you don't believe in them at -2. Like, for people who fancy Galway strongly, now you've got a much nicer bet.
Yeah, definitely, I think so. I mean, they were 9 points up for 15 minutes. If they were to do something like that again, you couldn't see them relinquishing the lead to such an extent. So, if you're still keen on Galway, it's actually the draw last week, all it's done is actually benefit you.
You've lost last week and you're going to make it back this week.
Yeah.
Right, okay, so a draw or either team to win by 1 to 4 points, that's 10 to 11.
Yeah, that was one we'd been speaking about last week in both the games, and obviously it came true. It's a funny little bet because it doesn't you can sit on the fence to a fair extent there. You don't need to pick the winner. You don't need to even pick them by 1 or 2 points. You're getting a 4 point swing either side for either team to win at 10 to 11. So, I mean, if it's an anyway tight game, that bet's pretty solid there.
Yeah, it is. Evens. And we did, in fairness to us, we don't like to blow our own trumpet, but we talked that one up last week, and it came in for both matches, obviously.
Yeah, well, yeah, sure. Look, we're probably wrong more than we're right, but at least when you get a one, you have to give it a little plug, I suppose.
Yeah, and we just brush when we're wrong. Like, I mean, that's the obvious one. So money back special. So free bet if your first goal scorer scores any time.
Yeah, so this is one we've been running for the whole summer there, and like a lot of people, this gives you a little bit of interest in the match when you have your first goal scorer in. And I think we talked about Johnny Dillon last week. He missed nearly an open goal, more or less, only for an on-rushing keeper in the early stages of the game, and he really was causing havoc in there and set up the goal himself as well. So he's 8 to 1 to score the first goal, and for him to score a goal any time and go away to win is 11 to 4.
Right.
And then on the other side of that, we've Peter Duggan in at 9 to 1 for first goal for Clare, and for him to score a goal any time and Clare to win is 11 to 2. So, well, he's been playing around the half forward line mainly. He has popped up with a few goals this year, and I mean, if he was to get a penalty or that now as well,
it's on the penalties, which is an interesting one. You have to obviously look at that when they're penalty takers. Usually we do this for All-Ireland finals, but because there's only one match at the weekend, we've got man of the match odds.
Yeah, so just to provide a bit more interest again there, with only the one game on, it's always an interesting area in man of match, as you say, at All-Ireland finals. It's a big one that people like to get their bets on for. But just this weekend, obviously, there's so much talk about Doughty Burke and Sean Conlon before the first game, after the first game, and I mean, that's all that's going to be people talking about going into Thurles now again this weekend. But I think if either of those were to come out on top in any way cleanly and their teams win, you'd nearly think they're guaranteed to be at least in the shake-up. So Doughty Burke to win man of the match this weekend is 14 to 1, and John Conlon is 12 to 1. I mean, either one of them could nearly win it last weekend on their first half for Doughty Burke and the second half for Conlon. If one of them was to get the upper hand for the full match and their team go on to win, you'd have to think that they'd be strong favourites to get in there. And then just two others on, one for each as well. I mean, Pádraig Mannion was sublime last weekend. He's just been having an unbelievable couple of seasons there. He's always right up the top of the man in the match standings in general, and he's 12 to 1 to be man of the match this weekend. And then we have Colm Galvin as well, who had obviously a huge influence on the game last week. Where he fits in this weekend now, it's hard to tell, but if he's to have the same sort of influence himself at 20 to 1, and if Clare were to win, he'd be another one to watch out for.
Yeah, fair old value. Now, usually we don't speak anything about football on the hurling podcasters. Hurling snobs don't like the big ball being mentioned, but we're including some football into this next bet.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, just with Galway going so well and they're on the dual side of things at the moment, maybe even the Galway hurling snobs might be actually supporting the footballers at the moment. I don't know, but both Galway teams, the hurlers and the footballers, to be winning at half time and winning at full time in those games was 19 to 5, just a bit less than 4 to 1. We've out to 22 to 5, so we've gone a bit over 4 to 1 for both Galway teams to be winning at half time and full time in the two games.
All right, just to completely fry your brains, try to follow the half time full times in two games. So thanks. Thanks very much for that, Joe.
No problem at all.
All right, that's all we've time for. We'll be back on Monday as usual on the bank holiday, and we'll review the Clare Galway game. Right, talk to you then. Good luck.
when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance of goal, I said I'd stay going, so it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's harder to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.